Order. Reports from standing committees.
February 11, 2016. Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 17, Notice of Mineral Property Transfer, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, Peterson. Excused, Senator Case. Senator Peterson, Chairman. February 11, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred Senate File 19, Public Funds Investing, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, Peterson, Senator Case, excused. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor, that clears the desk with that order of business of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate resolve itself back into committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is granted. And now we're back on the general file. Senator Landon.
You neither.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. First bill for our consideration this afternoon, Senate File 11. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 11, Youth Challenge Program, an act relating to the military department, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation, which returns a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Somebody has to pleasure this bill. Chairman Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since the other chairman doesn't know that he's up right now, I'll at least move for Senator Meyer's benefit, Senate File 11, Youth Challenge Program, and ask for favorable consideration by the Committee of the Whole. To my knowledge, there are no standing committee amendments at this time.
Senator Ross, thank you. Are you ready for the question? Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to point out one thing. While this is a valuable program, it was not clear to your Appropriations Committee based on some of the we did a few what we called global amendments to the budget, and it's not necessarily clear if the figure $2.5 million on line 21 is an accurate figure. We may need to come back and modify that depending on once we hear from the budget staff as to whether or not it could be reduced to like 2.4. So anyway, I just wanted you to know that based on what the Appropriations Committee did during its work throughout the budget, and of course this is part of the budget, that may be necessary to be amended.
Thank you, Senator. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 11, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Senate File 11 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Senate File 26. Would the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 26, Lapsing of Appropriated Funds Amendments, sponsored by Management Audit Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returns a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, Senator Wasserberger excused. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that there is an excuse for Senator Wasserberger or not. But on to the bill. Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate File 26, lapsing of appropriated funds amendments. Mr. Chairman, this goes to reversions. Almost all agencies revert money back through the Office of the State Auditor, and we addressed this. This body addressed this back in 2014 in, I think it's House Bill 70 or Senate. It was Senate File 70 in 2014. What this deals with, it has to do with, this came through a management audit evaluation on the B-11 process, and we came across that the dates that we had passed in 2014 actually weren't really convenient either for the agencies or for the state auditor. So what this bill does, if you look at it and go into the body of it on page 2, we start with, and this is to the reversions themselves, and not later than July 15th, the state auditor will provide each affected agency a list of the existing unexpended appropriations or authorizations from all prior fiscal periods. In other words, they will tell the agencies, here's the money that you had that was appropriated that has not been spent. Then a month later, not later than August 15th, each agency will provide the auditor a list of existing unexpended appropriations or authorizations for all prior fiscal periods at amounts which cannot be reverted, which can't be reverted. In other words, those which are encumbered that are going to be going out. And then on October 1st, the auditor will then revert all the unexpended appropriations for which there's no legal authority to carry forward. In other words, the actual reversion. When you get down to the bottom of page 2 and on to page 3, this is not the reversions. This is the reporting of the reversions. So not later than October 15th, the state auditor will provide each affected agency a list of the reversions that she has reverted, and then the agency will provide them back the nature of each outstanding obligation and the authority to maintain that appropriation and the timeline for when the expenditure is going to be going out, and then not later than the end of the year, December 31st, in consultation with the Department of Administration Information, will report to the governor and the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee all the unexpended appropriations and authorizations remaining after September 30th. If you go on to page 3, there'll be also be an explanation of why each amount did not revert. And then the last on page 4, line 9, is a repealer. And Mr. Chairman, I have had put on every desk how this applies into how this lays into the current statutes. And if you look on page 2 there, you get to 9-4. I'm sorry, it's 94207E. E, that's on the bottom of the first page of the handout. And then it's subparagraph 3. And that's what gets rid of that first portion there. Romanet 3 says, not later than October 1st, the auditor shall, and then revert any unexpected appropriations. That is actually language that was already covered earlier in the bill. So in other words, the two dates don't conflict with each other. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to take any questions anybody might have, and hope you look at the handout.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Questions? Comment. Questions being called on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report or do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 26, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Senate File 26 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 59. Would the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Thank you.
Senate File 59, Deferred Compensation Automatic Enrollment Amendments 2, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee. Was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation, which returns a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, Senator Wasserberger excused. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 59, Deferred Compensation Automatic Enrollment Amendments 2, and would yield the floor to the good senator from Sweetwater County.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I bring you Senate File 59, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, and I, like my colleague from Sheridan, say there really is no excuse for Senator from Gillette. members of the body, Senate File 59 is what the retirement system and the state auditor both consider kind of a cleanup bill. We passed a 457 deferred comp plan last year, and that allowed for the automatic enrollment of people into the retirement system. And then it was realized that a very small number of people might want to decide to get out after they've been in. There's a permissible time period up to 3 months. And the maximum that could be matched in there would be $60. And what the bill is asking for is that the total fund amount be refunded, simply because it is very, very labor-intensive to redistribute or pull back that amount of money. So it might be $20, $40. Maximum it could be is $60. To date, they've only had one person opt out of the program, and they had to recover the $20. And the amount of time was considerably more than the $20, and it would be considerably more than the $60. So Senate File 59 just simply allows for the total amount to be refunded, and the state auditor requested this bill. And I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 59, please say aye. Any opposed, no. Senate File 59 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 34. Would the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 34, Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Act, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, which returns a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the Senate file. Is there anyone on the Corporations Committee that might be willing to move that bill for us this afternoon? Thank you, Senator Meyer.
Yeah. I move that the committee, when the Committee of the Whole rises, reports it, do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 34. And what is Senate File 34? You got it?
Yeah. Who's doing it?
Uniform Fiduciary Act.
Uniform Fiduciary Act.
That's not what it said, though.
And who's going to do that?
I'll do it.
And defer to Senator Case for explanation of the bill.
I had a hunch, Senator Meyer. Thank you very much. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I can even do better than that. I'm going to defer to Senator Rothfuss, who is the chairman of the Digital Privacy Task Force, but I believe there is a standing committee amendment, and we'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 34, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 8, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be delighted to move the standing committee amendment and ask you to yield to Senator Rothfuss for a discussion of the bill and the amendment in a very bipartisan, forward-looking way.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Rothfuss, the hot potato comes to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to defer this to Senator Pappas. No reason.
I'm sorry, Senator. A third referral, and that's going to do it for this afternoon. Well, you've got it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is Senate File 34, Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Act. And, Mr. Chairman, this legislation has been a few years in the making. About 4 years ago, it came to the Corporations Committee's attention that we needed some legislation that addressed what's called decedent's privacy rights. In other words, when you pass away, what happens to the data that you've accumulated? You have these accounts. You've got passwords associated with them. You might have some private information and content in those accounts. You might have your pictures of your children that you want perhaps your spouse to have access to. And in recent years, states have adopted legislation and passed legislation that has tried to address what happens in the circumstances of somebody's passing if it is not explicitly clear what to do with it, if somebody else doesn't have those passwords, who has ownership. And then it gets more complicated than that, Mr. Chairman, because there's a fiduciary requirement to dispose of the estate after the passing of this individual, and then you need access to some private material that might help to dispose of that estate. For example, having access to email might help to find out what bank accounts the decedent had. Under that circumstance, it would be very valuable, but at the same time, there might be some very private information in that email that individual would not want disclosed. So while it seems very logical that you would have something as straightforward as, well, all of my information then belongs to my wife upon my death or something along those lines, it is further complicated by a federal law that precludes an implied consent for access to that digital information. You have to have an explicit consent for access to that digital information. So after all of that and all of the details that came into play 4 years ago, it became clear that it was too much to immediately come up with a simple piece of legislation, so it was moved down the road. It was then punted one more year after it was difficult to find. Then it was handed over to the Digital Information Privacy Task Force. We worked on it for 2 years, and we did not like the product until this year. And the reason we like the product now is that there have been two groups that have been working on this problem. One of them represents primarily industry. It's a trade organization that has as its clients or members some of the major industrial players that we've all heard of in social media, email, and elsewhere. That group prepared some model legislation that was very much in favor of industry and did very little for grandma and grandpa here in the state of Wyoming. Didn't protect their rights very well, but did an admirable job of protecting industry. At the same time, there was another group, the Uniform Law Commission, which is typical of typically creates this model legislation, and it was very good from a trust and estate attorney standpoint. It was very reasonable legislation for a trust and estate attorney, but industry did not like it at all, Mr. Chairman. So we shot the bill down last year that was the industry side. We finally got to the point in the interim where those two groups came together, drafted model legislation that they both agreed upon, and that, Mr. Chairman, is what takes shape here in the Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Act. So this legislation then represents a compromise between the Uniform Law Commission and this net choice group that represents industry. We also involved a trust and estate attorney from Wyoming that did some pro bono work to ensure that it was something that was in the best interest of the state of Wyoming and consistent with Wyoming statutory practices. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to go line by line through this act. I'll go through it more in concept, and if our more legal folks have concerns and considerations, we will try and investigate that. What I can say before we get there is we got to the point where we had consensus of all of the folks that had a vested interest in this in the Digital Information Privacy Task Force. So it's at a point now where everybody seems in agreement that this is a good approach. But looking at the legislation and going through it, you see on page 2, the beginning and moving several pages in, the definitions that are associated with the accounts, the agents, electronic communications, and other relevant definitions related to electronic media and content. Applicability begins on page 6 and talks about when and if it's applied, and this includes trusteeships, conservatorships, and personal representatives for fiduciary consideration. Moving on to page 8, This talks about user direction for disclosure of digital assets. This is a very important point and concept. In A, you see this idea of an online tool, which gets some priority, and there's some concerns with the online tool, but what it basically says is some of our major internet entities have tools available for end-of-life operation. In other words, one of the primary email providers, for example, you can use a tool which says if your account has been inactive for this period of time, you grant these rights to this person, and that handles the circumstance. There's a lot of sensitivity to ownership and spoofing of identity, so a lot of this is sensitive to that to preclude it, as well as, again, a sensitivity to comply with that federal statute that requires an opt-in or explicit authorization. So page 8 talks about that online tool. Page 9 talks about a terms of service agreement, which you can see is talking about not impairing a right of a custodian or a user under a terms of service agreement to access and use digital assets of the user. That just goes back to those things that you generally click through as you're moving through a website and probably don't pause to read. Bottom of page 9, moving on to page 10, procedure for disclosing digital assets. This talks about circumstances under which a custodian of that asset may or shall disclose the information of the user. And the concept here that you see in A, Romanets 1 and 2, talks about granting a fiduciary or designated recipient the full access to the user account under certain circumstances. If permission has been given, and then some circumstances where you can have access basically to the what's called the outside of the envelope, which means who has been sent messages but without providing the actual content of those messages. On 11, you see in D, a custodian is not required to disclose under this act a user's digital assets if the user directs or a fiduciary requests a custodian to disclose some but not all of the user's digital assets, and the segregation is consistent with the wishes of that individual, and it goes on to provide some details of that content. On 12, we see disclosure of the content of electronic communications of a deceased user. This provides for the details of when a request can be made, how that request would be made. In other words, if you need access to your spouse's records, this provides you the pathway to get that. You need a request for disclosure in a written electronic form, certified copy of that death certificate, and then a certified copy of the court order appointing the personal representative, or, as you can see in 4 and 5, other circumstances that can be requested if you have a finding of a court. On to 14, disclosure of other digital assets of a deceased user provides further details about custodial access and what the requirements are. Moving on to page 16, disclosure of content of electronic communications of a principal. This discusses using power of attorney and previous agreements that are in place for certification of an agent or other type of custodian. Bottom of page 17, disclosure of other digital assets of a principal. On to page 19, disclosure of digital assets held in a trust when trustee is the original user, provides details of that. Disclosure of the content of the electronic communications held in the trust when the trustee is not the original user. We need clarification there clearly. Page 21, disclosure of the digital assets held in trust when the trustee is not the original user. Further details. Page 22, disclosure of digital assets to the conservator of a ward. Again, there's some common themes here about the limitations and trying to assure that the interests of the decedent are respected, the federal law is respected, and the privacy requirements of the custodian are respected. On page 24, it goes to the fiduciary duty and authority. That continues on 26. 27, custodian compliance and immunity. There was a lot of discussion with regard to immunity about a full indemnification. That was not something that the committee was interested in. What we did was effectively a hold harmless as opposed to an indemnification to ensure that if the custodian of the records ended up violating a privacy interest of the decedent or of somebody else that was had private information stored on behalf of the decedent, then they would be held harmless in that action, but there would be no indemnification by the estate for any damages there. That was an important point where we had a lot of discussion. And then finally on page 30 is a discussion about this act modifies, limits, or supersedes the Electronic Signatures and Global and National Commerce Act, but does not modify, limit, or supersede Section 7001 of the Title 15 of the U.S. Code, which was the Authorized Electronic Delivery Act that many states have actually fallen by the wayside of. So, Mr. Chairman, one of the problems that other states that have passed this legislation have had is they're directly in conflict with the federal statute. So it ends up obviating the law that they have. One of the key nuances that was negotiated when these two groups got together was to actually get to the point where they complied with that federal law and ensured that the actions that are taken under the state law would be consistent with that federal law, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions as I can, and we can certainly look into more details if I don't have the answers readily available for how this plays out. I can get back to the folks that worked with us on drafting it and prepared it for this the two organizations that helped us with this legislation, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator, you've got a standing committee amendment. Would you like to take care of that at this time?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that seems like a good idea before I sit down for the first time, doesn't it?
I think that would be great. Yeah. Thank you.
It was so long ago that we talked about it. Mr. Chairman, it's already been moved. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 34 goes into the legislation, and this is an update, again, which has been approved by the two organizations. It goes into the Uniform Law Commission most recent draft that has appeared since we had this drafted to add simply in 5 or 6 places in the statute. Instead of just discussing fiduciary, add fiduciary or designated recipient to further clarify the language and make it consistent with the needs of these of the Decedent Privacy Rights Act. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would call for the question if there are no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Discussion, questions on the Standing Committee Amendment. All in favor of Senator Case's motion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 34, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to 34 has passed. We're back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion with the Committee of the Whole rises to report. You do so with a favorable recommendation. The Senate File 34, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Senate File 34 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 38. Would the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 38, Data Management Policies, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Pappas, and Scott. Noes, Senators Hicks and Meyer. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case, if you could hang on for just one moment, I would appreciate, fellow senators, if you would help me welcome Dr. Norby, who is our doc of the day, and he happens to be sitting over here to my right, your left. Would you please welcome the doctor of the day? Wow. Dr. Norby, thank you for being here. No telling when you might be needed with this group. You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Case?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm overwhelmed by the fact that the doctors keep getting younger and younger and younger as I get older and older. Same with the airline pilots. It's kind of scary for me. But, Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 38, Data Management Policies. Mr. Chairman, there is a Standing Committee amendment, and I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 38, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, after line 14.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'd last ask that Mr. Chairman yield my time to the good senator that was chairman of the Task Force on Digital Privacy.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is mercifully much, much shorter than the last piece of legislation. Senate File 38, data management policies, did come from the Digital Information Privacy Task Force, and one of the key areas of focus for the last year was trying to look at state governments as well as getting a little bit into the local governments and political subdivisions on what we can do to improve data security. When we look at page 2, talking about data policies, one of the things we found was that there was no uniform policy requirement for protecting sensitive data for our state agencies. So statewide, a few departments had obligations, some in state statute, some in federal statute, on how they should handle and look after private data, personally identifiable information, and the data they collect. But overall, there was no overarching policy. This legislation is intended to provide that. So you can see in the creation of 921-101 on page 2, right off the bat, every agency shall adopt, enforce, and maintain a policy regarding the collection, access, security, and use of data. You can see that there's going to be standards set by the state chief information officer, and here's a list of the standards we see in the Romanettes at the bottom of the page, which includes an inventory and description of all the data required of, collected, or stored by an agency. This is a key concept, is simply getting the agencies to even know what they're collecting and bringing in. And justifying that and trying to start the conversation to see if they're over-collecting or perhaps even under-collecting, but that seems less likely. Romanet 2 is authorization and authentication mechanisms for accessing that data. Romanet 3 gets to the safeguards and data encryption. 4 gets to privacy and security compliance standards. Romanet 5 looks for processes for identification of and response to security incidents. That's that breach notification. We passed a law last year that looked at commercial breach notification. This ensures that each of our agencies has one as well. And then Romanet 6 is something that really is lacking in statute overall, and that is a process for the destruction or elimination of the data at some point, right? They collect data. That data collection might have been justified. At what point is an agency obligated to get rid of that data, and how do they go about getting rid of that data? Policies are necessary there. In B on page 3, it gives a definition or at least the implication of what agency means, and the key provision here is that agency shall not include the state legislature, judiciary, University of Wyoming, or any community college in the state. It really is getting at the boards, commissions, councils, institutions that comprise the executive branch and are our standard definition of what we're looking for with an agency. When we look to Section 2, at the bottom of page 3, we had a lot of discussion about trying to have a similar piece of legislation for cities, towns, counties, and political subdivisions, Mr. Chairman. But when we had that discussion, it was clear that there was no set of standards or guidelines we could put into place that we could come up with that they would be able to implement in any reasonable form or fashion in the near future. With discussion and with consultation, with representatives from cities, towns, and counties and political subdivisions, it was decided that the best approach we could have to try and find a way to move towards data security in all of our political subdivisions was to work with the chief information officer and those political subdivisions to try and come up with some guidelines. So what we ended up doing is recommending here in Section 2 that we task the state chief information officer with developing the guidelines for collection, access, security, et cetera, by the counties, cities, towns, and other political subdivisions, and do so in consultation with those political subdivisions to come up with some best practices, and then present those back to the task force next year so that we can consider what potentially could be done, how much it would cost, how difficult it would be, and see if we can basically get anywhere with those smaller subdivisions. One of the things we realized is while it's certainly a challenge for a very small community, if you've got a city of only 10, or a small community of only 10, they still need data protection. It's an incredible challenge. It's almost an insurmountable challenge based on the resources they're going to have, but at the same time, you'd be hard-pressed to say to somebody who was living in a very small community, well, your town doesn't have the resources to protect your data, so they're not going to. And that's the challenge that this work will face for next year if we end up going with Section 2 here as well, Mr. Chairman. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. But before I do that, I would like to address the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, which I know has been moved by the good chairman. And the Standing Committee recommended, and I think it's a good recommendation, some further clarification based on a concern that was raised. So this inserts on page 3 after line 14 a new paragraph C. The governor, after consultation with the chief information officer, may set a date for specific agencies to comply with subsection A of this section and may revise that date as necessary. The concern was that somehow all of the agencies would have to be up and running with this new policy as of July 1st if this passes, and many recognize that that would be something that it would take a little bit of time to get to. So this allows for that and clarifies that flexibility that might be needed. And then finally, I think the most important part of this particular amendment, I'd encourage the adoption for this if nothing else, is page 4, line 3, the word such exists. And through an act of desuchification, by way of this amendment, we would eliminate said such. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Happy to answer any questions, and I call for the question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 if there aren't any.
Having addressed said such, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment to Senate File 38, please say aye.
Aye.
The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. Discussion. Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question. I see the effective date is July 1, but the report has to be given by September 1. Are they prepared to do a 2 months and 2 months give a full report? And then my other question you answered about cities and towns. Oh, on line 6, page 3, it says destruction and communication of data. It's odd that they're both in the same line, but what is communication of data in that context of that line there? Those are the two questions.
Any other questions? Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My question concerns on page 2, line 5, which line 5s through 7. The policy shall, at a minimum, comply with applicable federal and state law and adhere to standards set by the state chief information officer and include the following. I just, for the sponsor, and it's a note of caution. The question is, let me relate some experience, and then the question is, how do we prevent overkill on this thing? When I was mayor of Sheridan, we were trying to put together our records policy, and I sent the clerk down to some training sponsored by the state in Cheyenne. I don't know who was putting it on, but he came back with a fairly thick book that would have put President Obama's data policies for medical records to shame. And I looked at it, and I said, is this what law requires? And he said, no, I said, it's a good idea. I said, yeah, I know. Is it what the law requires? Because we have enough money to do what the law requires, not over and above and beyond that. You know, our resources are limited. And so whoever was teaching that course really was unfamiliar with budgetary constraints in terms of what they thought was a good idea to retain. So I'd like to know what protections we have that we don't go from the minimum that the law requires to a good idea to a very expensive proposition. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, addressing those concerns in turn, my good friend from Campbell County is looking, first of all, at the September 1 date for the reporting requirement. The reporting requirement is a task on the state chief information officer. The state chief information officer is a member of this task force. So it's a relatively short timeline, but the way the task force works, the task force concludes and then reports back to the committee. So we try and get those committees, the task force meetings done relatively early. This then may not be the world's most robust report based on its timeline, but the reality is if it was later, there wouldn't be an opportunity to report to the task force, and the task force ends next year. So that was the justification for it. It's not a perfect answer. It would be better if time allowed, but that's the reason and rationale behind it. Regarding the Romanet 6 on page 3, in accordance with existing law, processes for the destruction and communication of data, that might be an awkward phrasing because you don't expect those terms to be there, but it really is two separate concepts. The destruction of data is an important term. The communication of data, the idea there is frequently you have a situation where one agency collects data and then there is not necessarily a clear policy for when they would be willing to communicate that data to another agency. If they receive that data, they weren't the collector of it, so they might not even have any lifetime policy on it. We heard some interesting scenarios for how data can basically end up warehoused without anyone responsible for that and in the possession of one particular agency that doesn't have any need for it anymore. So that's what that's getting at, and it might not be the most elegant phrasing to accomplish that objective. Going to the good senator from Sheridan County's questions about at a minimum insure. The idea there is that there might be some agency-specific requirements, and it's going to go back both to the chief information officer, and obviously the governor above is responsible in the end for whether or not the policies of the agencies end up being good policies, as well as if there's significant budget implications. Those budget implications are going to come back to our Joint Appropriations Committee, and there's no obligation to have an extensive foray into this. So I would say it would be checked by the powers that be above, governor or the heads of the agency, as well as by our legislature. If there's concern that that's overly broad, I'm not averse to it, but that was the intent there, was just to ensure that some agencies might need to look at a few other things, and we were making that clear. So I'm not averse to a change if there's a better way to structure and accomplish that objective. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion? Do I hear question on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 38, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No.
No.
Senate File 38 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 17. If the reading clerk would please read the Senate file. Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, before we do that, could I take one moment to recognize some of our guests who are about to leave, but before they do so? Mr. Chairman, we have members of the Associated Students of the University of Wyoming here. They've come over to testify on some legislation that's currently taking place or going through the process over in the other chamber, but they spent some time with us today. These are some of our best and brightest at the University of Wyoming. And I would like to take this opportunity to welcome them with a rousing round of applause from the Senate. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you to the ASUW Student Senate for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate you stopping by. Thank you very much. Good luck in your spring semester. And, Mr. Reading Clerk, I apologize for that interruption. We're back on Senate File 17. Would you please read that Senate file for us?
Senate File 17, Notice of Mineral Property Transfer, an Act Relating to Minerals, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which returns a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, and Peterson, Senator Case excused. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. What is your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation or do pass on Senate File 17. There are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation on this good bill, I turn it over to the good senator from Crook County.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill comes to you from the great Revenue Committee, hardworking, came from the Interim Committee. This was brought to us by the counties, basically, and what it addresses is they were having some troubles as far as when minerals, particularly wells, get transferred, that they weren't being notified about it, and they'd end up with a company that was literally gone. They'd moved away and gone, and there was no way to collect on it. The notice was not getting on. So that what this bill does is does notice of transfer. It's not notice of sale. There's a difference. This is notice of transfer. And 30 days prior, the commission, who already has the notice, will forward that notice on to the county so that they know before the people have got out of the county, and so they also can properly transfer on their records back over to do it. It keeps the county records square. It keeps the taxes all paid square and right. It's a good bill. The second part of the bill, other than the notice, which is the 30-day notice, is a confidentiality notice that falls under the Administrative Procedures Act and says that everybody will keep it confidential, that it's there. Talking to some of the people in the industry, it's not such a big deal because usually the sales have happened, the transfer is not. So we had some real worries in the industry potentially that you could leak out a sale and it could kill a sale. And basically we were told, no, that's not the case, that this is on transfer. The Oil and Gas Commission has basically enacted a major part of this bill in their rules. Committee felt like they'd go ahead and bring the bill ahead. It also does have the guaranteed confidentiality for everybody. With that, I would encourage your consideration and stand for questions.
Any questions on Senate File 17? Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand the difference between a sale and a notice of transfer, but if you've negotiated a sale on a piece of property, and then, you know, you haven't completed until you have a purchase and sale agreement, which could take time, and yet you're thinking you may know a time when you're going to actually transfer it. I don't know how you figure out 30 days before that transfer. That's my question, is on the timing of it. And you know, this is going to be law, so if you don't do it within 30 days, you violated the law. Did you have any discussion about that?
Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Good Senator, yes, we had some about it, and it's basically a closing, so it's a notice of closing, and when we visited with some of the industry folks, they said normally it's already posted publicly when we've done it by the time the transfer comes, but they didn't seem to think it was a problem. I am open to change or further explanation by Chairman or someone else if I'm missing on it. Thank you.
Senator Kinski, let's go to you first and then back to Senator Von Flater.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I would make note that this question came up in committee and the Oil and Gas Commission director was there, Mr. Watson, who made note of the fact that under the current regulations, it's required that the Oil and Gas Commission be notified 30 days before the transfer, such that all we're doing is asking then the Oil and Gas Commission to additionally notify the county clerks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious if there's any discussion in the committee about anybody else that needs to be notified other than the county clerk.
Any other questions? Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. No, there was not. This bill was specifically brought by the clerks, and we did not address anybody else.
Any other discussion? Questions? Do I hear a question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 17, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Senate File 17 has passed the committee of the whole. The next Senate file for our consideration, Senate File 19. Would the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File 19, Public Funds Investing, an act relating to public funds, sponsored by the Revenue Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, who returns a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, and Peterson, excused Senator Case. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Senate file. What is your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass on Senate File 19 and There are no standing committee amendments on this one as well. And for further explanation on this good bill, I refer to the good senator from Sheridan, Senator Kinski.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill is intended to enable. Thank you. This bill is intended to enable local governments and other various governmental agencies to turn over to the state treasurer funds that they may have, reserve funds, annuity funds, so forth, for investment in a longer-term pool than the traditional YSTAR account. What we heard in the course of our interim study was that, at least in the case of cities, towns, and counties, they're hard-pressed to match the expertise of the state treasurer in terms of investing in bonds and such. It's something that, and nor are they able to buy with the kinds of economies of scale that the state treasurer can. So the idea here is that, for instance, the Lake DeSmit Joint Powers Board has an endowment. They'd like to invest it with the state treasurer because invested on their own, they're earning less than 0.5%. And that's, we heard that from local government agencies and other boards over and over and over again, that, that on their own they earn less than 0.5%. The state treasurer, by contrast, on a portfolio of longer dated bonds, earned 2.6% last year. So that's a substantial increase over what they're able to do on their own. And in the case of the Lake DeSmit situation, it would move them from looking at having to subsidize in the span of a few years to being self-sufficient for decades to come. So with that, I would walk you through the bill. The first part, 93503, simply adds a cross-reference in existing statute which provides for investment of annuity contracts and so forth into the YSTAR account, which is short-term investments. That's the 91416, and also authorizes such investments into the section created hereby, 94831A, subsection Romanet, such and such. On page 27.
27.
So then we, on 94831, we see at the top of page 3, that one of the authorized investments by the treasurer of funds of political subdivisions, municipalities, et cetera, is as outlined below in these section. It is into instruments as provided in 94715A, D, and E. And that simply authorizes the SLIB board to promulgate regulations, which have been, and specifies that these investments are bonds only, no equities. Further saying that upon request by a county, municipality, district, or other entity, the treasurer may provide that fund under the same conditions and terms as in 91416. This would be intended, as you see in 9, a second local investment pool with more long-term redemption options than the YSTAR or the local investment pool, and have penalties for early withdrawal as provided by the treasurer. It would be subject to the lines 15, 16, be subject to the rules and regulations adopted by the treasurer. 18 through 20, be invested in a manner, obtain the highest return consistent with preservation of corpus. And 22 to 23, be managed in accordance with 91416. A question that did come up in committee is the state indemnifying these entities against any losses? And it was made clear by the treasurer that there's a provision in 91416 that says, caveat emptor, buyer beware, no guarantees of any particular return. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move for favorable consideration of SF-19.
Thank you, Senator. Questions or discussion on Senate File 19? Do I hear a question on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 19, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Senate File 19 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion has carried. Mr. President.
Bill.
Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 37, do pass, amended. Senate File 11, do pass. Senate File 26, do pass. Senate File 59, do pass. Senate File 34, do pass, amended. Senate File 38, do pass, amended. Senate File 17, do pass. Senate File 19, do pass. Senator Landon, Chairman.
Mr. Landon, Senator Landon.
Mr. President, I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Report's been adopted. Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. President. Pursuant to Senate Rule 5-5, I move that Senate File 52, State Shrub, be recalled from your Committee Number 11 Journal for further consideration by the Senate.
Second. Second.
Heard the motion. I don't think it's debatable. Roll call.
I'm doing fine, thank you. We won't be here long.
Anderson?
No.
Anderson, no. Barnard?
Yes. Aye.
Aye. Diebout?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Co?
No.
No. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 27 aye, 7 no.
I don't think it has 27.
I'm sorry. 23 aye, 7 no.
There we go. Now what? By your vote, the bill has been recalled. The jacket will come back, and then I think from there the president assigns it to a new committee. Desk. Let's see. Mr. Vice President, why don't you make a motion to adjourn until tomorrow at 9:30. Here we go. I think we did. So, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. We're ready to leave the day until 9:30, I think.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members of the Senate, we are going to start tomorrow at 9:30, and I believe we're going to have tomorrow's the last day for introductory votes, and as I understand, there's maybe 10 or 15 of those, plus we'll do general file, which will be whatever the committees can work tomorrow on, so it won't be a large general file. We'll have second, third reading. The idea is to try, for those of you who want to try to go home, get you out at noon if we can, and that's what we're going to shoot for. I will tell you that the kitchen is going to bring in some sandwiches, so if we run a little late, you'll be able to have lunch here. If not, you can grab a sandwich and head down the road. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn itself until 9:30 tomorrow morning, Friday, February 12th.
Announcement, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m., committee members. Note the time. In the donor room, S-27, Senate File 45, Rural Health Care Districts Authority, Senate File 61, Occupational Health and Safety Civil Penalties, Senate File 58, Involuntary Hospitalization and Treatment, and then, if we have time, we will take initial testimony on Senate File 55, Licensure Board Powers. We will not take final action on that bill, and we will take further testimony on that bill on Monday. So that's just the initial testimony on 55, if we have time.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in Jonah Room S-19. to take up Senate File 15, Hathaway Scholarship Eligibility, Senate File 24, Supplemental At-Risk Funding for Early Childhood Education, and Senate File 81, School Capital Construction, Charter School Leases.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 5, Agriculture and Public Lands, will meet in about 10 minutes in General Room S-27 to consider two bills, Senate File 53, Large Project Funding, Senate File 31, Omnibus Water Bill Planning.
Mr. Vittori, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Rules Committee will meet today, Thursday, February 11th, in about 15 minutes in room S-819 to discuss the following Senate files. Senate File 2, Attorney General Opinions, Legislative Requests, Senate File 29, Legislator Participation in State Benefit Plans, and Senate Joint Resolution 3, Introduction of Budget Bills 2.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet upon adjournment to consider the following re-referrals. Senate File 32, Alternative School Accountability, Senate File 48, Criminal Justice Reform, and Senate File 9, Railroad Quiet Zones.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet about 15 minutes after noon recess tomorrow in Jonah Room S-18 to consider Senate File 18, Competitive Bid Specification Requirements, Senate File 39, Cease and Transfer Priority List, Senate File 64, Industrial Siting Permit Amendments, and if time allows, Senate File 65, Patent Trolling.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Friday, February 12th at 8 a.m., Jonah Room S-18 to consider the following bills. This is a revised agenda. We've added another bill. Senate File 10, Firearms Exemptions from Execution. Senate File 50, Sexual Assault, Position of Authority. Senate File 46, Asset Forfeiture 1. And Senate File 3, Permissive Preference for Veterans in Private Employment.
That completes the notices. Any further announcements? If not, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate shall stand adjourned until tomorrow, 9:30 at Friday, February 12th.